Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, March 18th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. The International Monetary Fund says it's not automatic that Harare will get a loan in the third quarter of this year.
That is a decision that has to be made by our executive board. That is not a decision that is made by, you know, the Zimbabwe team.
Zimbabwe starts buying maize from Mexico, Ukraine and other nations in an effort to tackle serious hunger.
We have additional imports coming in, mainly from Beira and also Maputo. We'll be starting the Durban route and the Tanzania route.
And Zimbabweans say people responsible for the alleged looting of diamonds worth $15 billion should be arrested.
I want to see people that showed ineptitude, the technocrats that were supposed to be doing these deals, the directors who represented the government in these companies, either arrested or fired or facing the consequences.
For these stories and much more, stay tuned. The International Monetary Fund, or IMF, says it's not automatic that Harare will get a loan in the third quarter of this year, as the determination will be made by the International Lender of Last Resort's Executive Board. Getting fresh money will also depend on Harare settling its $1.8 billion in arrears to the international lenders. In Lima, Peru, last year at the annual IMF World Bank annual meetings, Zimbabwe had set an ambitious target to repay the loan by April. John Mangudia told Reuters that Harare expects to pay arrears by June and thereafter the IMF to resume lending the country money for the first time since 1999. However, skepticism remains on whether the Southern African nation can pay back its debts, as it is presently repaying a paltry $150,000 a month on its $124 million debt to the IMF. Senator Bob Corker, chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, wrote a letter recently to the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury stating that Washington must insist on democratic reforms as per the U.S. laws before endorsing Harare's bid for fresh loans. IMF resident representative in Harare, Christian Bedis, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the debt payment date has remained fluid for Zimbabwe.
This was always like a fluid target. These things are not written in stone. And, you know, they hope they will do it by June, and that's fine. I mean, you know, if they can do it, that's good. You know, it might be a bit later. You know, what I said last time when we had the interview not too long ago before the mission came, I said, you know, sometime in the second half of the year, and I think that's a realistic assumption. But of course, you know, if they want to pay back the IMF arrears, you know, they could do this tomorrow if they wanted to.
Zimbabwe is also saying it is expecting a loan from the IMF in the third quarter of this year. Can you comment on that?
That is a decision that has to be made by our executive board. That is not a decision that is made by, you know, the Zimbabwe team, or by our management for that matter. Our management decides whether something is sent to the board, but the ultimate decision rests with our executive board.
In your decision, for example, to give Zimbabwe fresh loans, to what extent is it determined by the U.S. government, which has just renewed targeted sanctions against Zimbabwe? And there was a congressman who was saying that America must actually block any new funding to Zimbabwe.
You can go to our external website, imf.org, and find, you know, the quotas and shareholdings of all our board members, basically. And that gives you an idea, you know, what the weight is of our chairs, you know. But I think this is really not something I can comment on, actually, because, you know, this is up to each of our shareholders, you know, to decide what they want to do and what they can do.
That was IMF resident representative in Harare, Christian Bedis, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu on the line from Harare. Zimbabwe Millers Association Chairman Tafadzwa Musarara says his association has managed to secure maize to feed the nation for the next 2.5 months while they wait for more consignments to reach the country. Musarara says they are now buying the scarce commodity from countries like Mexico, Ukraine and Uruguay after Zambia and South Africa stopped selling maize to other nations. Though he could not disclose how much the millers are paying for a ton of maize, Musarara assured the consumers that there won't be any price increases of the staple food maize mill. He tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that they are expecting the first consignment of 90,000 tons through the port of Beira in the next few weeks.
The maize situation has improved. We have moved from 6 weeks cover that we had in January to 2.5 months cover, which means that we now have enough maize to feed the country for the next 2.5. However, we will have additional imports coming in, mainly from Beira and also Maputo. We'll be starting the Durban route and the Tanzania route. So we are doing everything possible to open as many frontiers as we can to ensure that we have as much non-GMO white maize getting to the country to sustain our food security.
Some would think that it's costly for you to buy from these faraway countries. How are you going to recover the cost? Is it not going to be passed on to the consumers?
I think it's a wrong perception that the maize from gypsies is more expensive than here. You should appreciate the fact that already Zimbabwe has the highest price of maize in the whole world. And we are buying this maize at a very low price using the cheapest mode of transport, which is sea, and then we rail it to Harare. So we don't expect any phenomenal increase in the price of millet. The price is likely to stabilize, and we also want to capitalize on volume.
How much are you paying for a ton?
I can't disclose that at the moment, but all I can tell you is that the price of volume is not going to change.
And that was Tafadzwa Musarara, chairman of the Zimbabwe Millers Association, speaking there with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. A High Court judge in Bulawayo today reserved judgment in a matter in which a former Senator Matson Hlalo, an expelled member of Morgan Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change, is challenging his expulsion from the party and the Senate. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more from Bulawayo.
High Court Judge Justice Noctula Moyo said she would make a ruling at a later date in the case in which Hlalo filed an urgent chamber application seeking to have the court set aside his recent recall from the Senate as well as his dismissal from the party. Hlalo is also seeking an interim order to stop the MDCT from appointing another person as a senator until the matter is finalized. Asked how confident he is in having the court rule in his favor in a matter that is between him and his political party, Hlalo, who is being represented by Attorney Godfrey Nyoni, said he had been compelled to approach the courts as a last resort because he felt the MDCT had failed to follow the dictates of justice, one of the principles that the party espouses. He said his dismissal from both the party and the Senate was not procedural as the MDCT's constitution had not been properly followed.
The whole issue about why we are at this court is to show the world that people must stand up for their rights irrespective of who trashes them. As they say, charity begins at home. If people are not able to stand up against their party on cases of injustices, and then you say you are going to fight against injustice in national politics, then you are saying the wrong things.
But the MDCT Secretary General, Douglas Monzora, who's representing the party, said the party has clearly laid down procedures that are meant to address members' grievances. He said the MDCT decided to expel him as he had chosen not to follow the regulations, adding that Hlalo's case has no merit as the party followed some provisions of its constitution to expel him and recall him from Senate.
There is absolutely no case as far as we are concerned, and there are a lot of decided cases on this issue. The case of Abednego Bebe and the three of his colleagues versus Welshman was decided in 2009 by the courts in favor of what we are doing. The case of Tendai Biti and others was decided again in favor of what we are saying. The case of Baskiti, Temba Mliswa and so on. Once a political party has dismissed an elected person, that person must lose their seat.
Shalo's clash with the MDCT emanates from his refusal to accept the election of Gift Banda as the party's chairperson for Bulawayo province. Shalo argued that the internal vote in which Banda was elected in 2014 was marred by violence. His fight over Banda's election is still in the courts. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
Zimbabweans generally agree that people responsible for the alleged looting of diamonds worth $15 billion should be arrested regardless of their political affiliation. ZANU-PF's London-based Nick Mangwana and George Mkwananzi of the People's Democratic Party are among Zimbabweans calling for the punishment of those that looted diamond proceeds. They say it's worrying that the country lost billions of dollars in potential revenue at a time Zimbabwe needed a huge financial injection to revive the ailing economy. President Robert Mugabe claimed recently that the government only received $2 billion of the estimated $15 billion that may have been generated from diamond sales in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province. Mkwananzi claims that the money was allegedly used to finance ZANU-PF's previous election campaigns. But Mangwana argues that this is impossible, as the alleged looting of the gems may have mostly happened when Zimbabwe had a government of national unity.
Are you saying the ZANU-PF campaign cost $15 billion? That would be nonsensical, of course. Then comes the issue of collective responsibility. The cabinet said every Tuesday. So it's everybody's responsibility. This speculation that this bureaucrat or that one that did that, it's speculation. It's really political grandstanding. It has nothing to do with the facts on the ground. The facts on the ground is the country experienced some grand theft of its resources. And everybody should be focused on recovering that. Everybody should be focused on getting the people, and the government should be focused on getting the people that committed this grand theft to account, and also to face justice. I think that's what everybody should be focused on. Whether it be the Chinese or not, it doesn't matter. But from the president's interview, he indicated that it was bad deals that were made, and the Chinese did that. And we also have got recent reportage that the Anjin, for example, didn't have a real agreement with the government or contract with the government. That shows, obviously, a bit of ineptitude from somebody somewhere or from the cabinet of the day. So that's how it is. We cannot try to split hairs and remove this from responsibility and remove that from responsibility. Everybody was responsible. The country lost revenue. Let's try to recover that if we can. That's number one. Number two, it's not like the money was the $15 billion was a heap somewhere when somebody started, somebody picked up that heap, put it on a truck and went with it. No, this man, as I'm using the word pilfer, it basically means it was leaking. It is a massive leakage. So recovering it will be extremely difficult. We hope it will be recovered. I do hope personally that it will be recovered. But I'm also not holding my breath because I know that it's not going to be easy. Let's be pragmatic. What I want, if you ask me, I want to see people that showed ineptitude, the technocrats that were supposed to be doing these deals, the directors who represented the government in these companies, either arrested or fired or facing the consequences or facing an inquiry where we actually can all interrogate what actually happened. That's all we need to know. What happened and how can we recover that? This issue of throwing mud all around, flinging it all over the place, does not work. It won't take us anyway. Because what it does is forces the government, forces everybody to close things, not to be transparent. Let's all be very honest. Let's all do self-examination. Let's stop politicking. Let's focus on what's happening. We need our money back. It's a lot of money.
Mr. Mkwananzi?
We attempted to blame the entire government of ZANU-PF. It's not like this thing is just emerging now. During that time when enough money wasn't trickling into the government coffers via the Minister of Finance, The Minister of Finance then did raise a flag that we are not getting enough from Chiatwa. What's happening? If the president, who is now raising the issue now, was alert and not sleeping like he does every time, he should have acted then. They should have been able to nip this in the bud, acted on the call by the Minister of Finance then that the money from the diamonds proceeds wasn't tricking into the ministry's coffers. So if really they are to be absolved from this thing, let the president set a commission in place or audit whatever processes would be the best to not just to recover, but to find out who did what. Because I believe the leakages that Comrade Mangwana is referring to were deliberately created so that then somebody was going to benefit, including those that are in ZANU-PF. So they should not leave any stone unturned. Let them find out, you know, comb through the entire structures of, you know, the diamond process up to the end, A up to Z, and find out who did what, who did not do what. Because some people committed the crime by actually the way of commission, others by way of not doing it. So let's see who did what, and we shall observe or absolve those that did not do it.
And that was George Mkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party. You also heard from Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF provincial chairperson in London. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Coming up, President Mugabe officially opens a private university, and this evening we are featuring Amara Brown, daughter of the late Zimbabwean musician Andy Brown. But first, let's take a look at regional and international news. Real estate billionaire Donald Trump's coarse rhetoric has won him some fans, but there's at least one large group in America that's increasingly unimpressed: women. Half of U.S. women say they have a very unfavorable view of the frontrunner for the Republican presidential nomination, according to Reuters Ipsos polling, up from the 40% who felt that way in October. The European Union and Turkey reached a provisional deal today to curb the unprecedented influx of migrants into Europe. And an American who said he defected from the Islamic State group has admitted he wasn't thinking straight when he decided to join the militant group in the Middle East this year. President Robert Mugabe today officially opened the controversial Zimbabwe Ezekiel Guti University in Bindura and later held a rally in what appears to be a kickoff of the 2018 election campaign season. In his wide-ranging address, Mr. Mugabe promised that everyone would be given food without regard for their political affiliation, although he acknowledged that there were transport problems to deliver the food to the villagers. The university run by the Zimbabwe Assemblies of God Church was built on a disputed piece of land, Barase Farm, in which a gold miner, Charles Chakumba, sought a court order to evict the church from the claim. However, the courts ruled in favor of the church. Mr. Mugabe, who was accompanied by his wife, Grace, reminded his detractors that a new leader could only be elected at Congress. For an analysis, we reached independent political commentator Blessed Ngomo, who says Mr. Mugabe's message will not resonate with the masses because there were many promises from last elections that remain unfulfilled.
Actually, the ZANU-PF chances of winning 2018 are very slim. But because they use dictatorship and rigging methods, that's what makes them the winners. But as far as I'm concerned, ZANU-PF is finished, and it has been finished since 2010. So whatever method they are going to use, it won't be transparent or even fair and free.
But we've seen some analysis that have put it across that ZANU-PF might be rigging, but it has always had some kind of support. Do you think there is something wrong with the analysis that the rigging might be there, but it's not as much as people want it to look like?
With ZANU-PF, even if they rigged, they've got a way to get out of rigging. Remember what happened in 2008? After the rigging, they then called for a GNU. They have got the deaths in rural areas where they just intimidate people. Of which some of those rural people, they are very ignorant. At the end of the day, they will tell you that Baba Mugabe won. Of which, if we are to go into the system, we will find out that MDC is always winning every time. And whatever method they use, they just intimidate people to say that ZANU-PF won. But to be honest with you, there is no winning anymore for ZANU-PF. It's only now they are using dictatorship. Only means to remain in power, to stay in power, because they enjoy power.
And that was independent commentator Blessed Nkomo. She spoke to Studio 7 on the line from South Africa. We were unable to get a comment from ZANU-PF chairperson Simon Kayamoyo.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Burma's Union Parliament has elected Tin Cho of the National League for Democracy as the country's first truly civilian president in more than 50 years. The presidential election is another important step forward in Burma's democratic transition, noted U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in a message of congratulations. Tin Cho is close advisor to National League for Democracy leader and former political prisoner Aung San Suu Kyi. He has worked with her to support Burma's democracy movement since 1992. We commend the people and institutions of Burma who continue to work together to ensure a peaceful transfer of power after the November 2015 elections, said Secretary Kerry. November's elections were another step forward in Burma's historic democratic transition and the culmination of a reform process that started in 2011 with the relaxation of press and internet censorship laws, the release of political prisoners, including Aung San Suu Kyi, and efforts to improve the electoral process. The U.S. supported these reforms by easing sanctions previously levied due to human rights abuses by the country's military junta. The U.S. also provided more than $18 million to assist the electoral process. The National League for Democracy swept the November elections, winning 77% of seats in the Union Parliament and giving it the power to choose the president. Reforms will, however, need to continue. The Burmese constitution reserves 25% of parliamentary seats and key cabinet posts for the military and allows them to name a vice president. State Department spokesman John Kirby calls the allowance of unelected officials a structural and systemic flaw, noting that the people of Burma should be allowed to vote for their leaders of their own choice. The United States remains committed to supporting the people of Burma in their ongoing pursuit of democracy, development, and national reconciliation, said Secretary Kerry. We continue to encourage political and civil leaders to work together in the spirit of national unity and reform.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A talented musician and actress Amara Brown, who's riding high with the song Mokoko, a collaboration with Titan, real name Jabulo Nkomo, says she's now working on a video of the same song, which will be released within the next few weeks. Amara also recently scooped a first music award, a collaboration with Ja Praiser, for best collaboration for the song Kure Kure at the 2016 Zimbabwe Music Awards. Amara's talent has also impressed the legendary jazz legend Yuma Sekela, the celebrated South African trumpeter, composer and singer, who has also composed a song with her. The song is called Next Life. The young musician has also won praise from Zimbabwean music icon Oliver Mtukudzi. Amara speaks with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about her music and more.
At the moment, I have been working on a music video, the video from Coco.
How long does it take to produce a music video?
Well, to be honest with you, it really just depends on how much work you'd like to put in. I'm one of those people who, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and sometimes perfection can get in the way of progress. I'm currently learning to you know, avoid that. But I'm very obsessive and I'm very labor intensive. Everybody who works with me knows that.
So when are you likely to release it for public consumption?
In the next couple of weeks. We haven't set a date. I actually just had a meeting with Titan a little bit back, and we were looking at the photos and talking about the release plan, because obviously I'm releasing a song called Next Lifetime, which is featuring Huma Sekela, and we're trying to make it so that that doesn't clash with my next single release. And so we're trying to put out the video before I put out the song.
And let's talk about the Zimbabwe Music Awards. Your duet Kure Kure with Ja Praise was voted the best collaboration. How did you receive it?
Kure Kure was one of those songs where it took me by surprise, the people's reception to that song. Everything about that song, from how it did to the, you know, how it did at the annual chart to, you know, how it did when the music video was, you know, released. Everything was just always incredible about this song. And so getting an award for it really was just thanks to the fans.
There's also this problem of piracy. How is it affecting you?
Well, piracy is one of those things that used to bother me. I'm really just past the point of caring about it, simply because parts of our industry that are underdeveloped, we do not have proper distribution channels. Nigeria had the same problem once upon a time, but the pirates became legit. They actually became registered businesses and became distributors who could actually pay you out for your master and say, well, listen, here's $100,000, give us the master, we're going to run with it. And before you know it, one single is selling in the millions. Now that I'm here, I'll be your protector, be your mahogany.
And that was our musician Amara Brown speaking there with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. And now a recap of today's top stories. The International Monetary Fund says it's not automatic that Harare will get a loan in the third quarter of this year. Zimbabwe starts buying maize from Mexico, Ukraine and other nations in an effort to tackle serious hunger. And that's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Melinkomo. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C. And before I go, remember that tonight on Live Talk, Gibbs Dube and Blessing Zulu will be talking with listeners and experts about the looting of diamonds in Manicaland province. Good night, Zimbabwe.